Blog Talk Radio.
Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krvnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
And good morning. Welcome to Oregon Update. It is a sunny Saturday morning right here in downtown Eugene. It is the 10th of April, and we got a lot of things to talk about today. We got some news items we want to kind of touch on, and later on in the show, we're going to talk about electric cars. Will they actually replace the gasoline engine? And
yes.
And actually, there's one that if you check out our Blog Talk Radio website, I have a link to this one car in particular that has won beat three world speed records for the quarter mile. So, but we'll get to that and more. But first, Cliff, how are things in Cottage Grove?
Things are absolutely spectacular in Cottage Grove. We have the beautiful weather as well. Has been all morning long. It's been really gorgeous. Probably going to be that way all day today. Well, really cold last night. I mean, it down to 31 degrees last night, so it was really cold. My sister had to get up early this morning and go to Eastern Washington, so she get to drive in the cold morning. Crisp, I guess you'd call it. But anyway, yes, lots of things happening over the weekend, or, over the week. It's kind of different. We do things on the weekend and review what's happening during the week instead. So that's kind of interesting. What were we going to do the news first, or what are we doing first?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and do the news first. I believe you got a news item about a plane crash.
Well, I heard it this morning. I woke up to this this morning on the television, and I guess the president of Poland and a bunch of other Polish dignitaries, I don't know what you want to call them, but various and sundry ones anyway, died in a plane crash this morning, a plane that the weather was really, really bad, and in the process of trying to make a landing, the airplane landed about a mile away from the airport before it got to the airport into the trees and forests and things like that, and no one survived, unfortunately. So this is a really, really sad day in Poland. They've got a lot of people that are, all I can think of is the word celebrate, but that's not really what it is. They're all worried about what's going to happen next. I assume, I thought about that when I heard that this is going on, or saw it. I say I hear things on television because I actually have the television going on in the bedroom when I'm asleep, and most of the time I don't see anything. I just hear it. So thank God a lot of the news things they do with, they just read the news and I can understand what's going on. But I was thinking about that when I heard this, about how we don't let our president and a whole bunch of our upper dignitaries all travel in the same airplane together.
Right.
So that same reason, so that we don't have the problem of them all dying at once, I guess, which is a really major concern. I don't know.
Exactly. In fact, this is from MSNBC roughly about 56 minutes ago. It says Polish President Leech, I'm not going to even try to pronounce it. Kislewski or something. And some of the country's highest military and civilian leaders died Saturday when the presidential plane crashed as it came in for a landing in thick fog in western Russia, killing 97.
Yeah. Everybody died. Yeah, at least that's what they said when I was listening to it earlier this morning. I got in on it when it was first happening, obviously. because it was, I don't know, about 4 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock this morning our time that I heard all of it. So it's kind of sad. It really is. But that's and we had an earthquake here.
Yeah. Let me just add something real quick here to that story. On board were the Army's chief of staff, the Navy chief commander, the heads of the air and land forces. Also killed were the nation's bank president, deputy foreign minister, army chaplain, head of national security office, deputy parliament speaker, Olympic committee head, civil rights commissioner, and at least 2 presidential aides and 3 lawmakers.
Can you imagine all of those high-ranking people from one country on the same airplane? I mean, that just sounds to me like a disaster waiting to happen anyway. That's horrible.
Exactly. It's like, wow.
Air transportation is actually probably the safest transportation that there is, and yet still accidents do happen. And this proves that, of course, I'll tell you. Boy, that's even sad. It really is. But
well, and like you said, to put everybody on one plane, yeah, it's safe, but you know that's quite an inventory of people, you know, the high-ranking individuals.
And you know, this is also part of this this world financial collapse, because that airplane supposedly was like 20 years old, wasn't in the world of greatest condition, but the economy of the country dictated that they couldn't afford to have a new one, something like that. And it's just, you know, there are points where you need to bite the bullet and do something, because you just can't take those chances. But it was nothing wrong with the airplane that happened. It was weather. It was weather-related. It was not airplane-related, so that's another story. But that's really sad. That I don't know if other countries, obviously, at least that one didn't, but I just assumed other countries were as careful as we are. You know, we don't send all of our big wigs on the same airplanes anywhere at ever. We just don't do that.
Right.
That's all going to the same place. They quite often would go on separate planes, which seems a big waste, but that proves that's not true, obviously. So that was one of the things. We had an earthquake here sometime this in the middle of the week. It was very small. Nobody even noticed, except, of course, the earthquake folks who are paid to notice. But so nobody, there was no big thing about that. There was no damage, no problems done with that. I'm waiting for the big one. I really think we're going to get one, but just sitting back waiting for that. So I think everybody needs to just keep that in mind, because it's going to happen.
Yeah, this was a 4.3 magnitude earthquake about 120 miles off the coastline around Bandon, Oregon.
Yeah, which didn't affect much of anybody. I just, again, saw that on television. I see all these little things, and they get stuck in my head, and I don't look any further than that. It's no big thing. What's happening with our road, our newly named road? I guess our governor has decided, has made the, is it the governor that made the
decision? He made the concession that, just a brief history, the governor proposed and the transportation, I think it was ODOT or one of the transportation officials, voted in favor of renaming the Beltline to the Randy Pape Beltline at a cost of $250,000 to replace all the signs. Well, a lot of people complained loudly about that, and so they decided to make a concession, and the Pape family was okay with it as well, to, we'll just put a sign at the beginning and the end of Beltline at a cost of about $1,500. So in other words, they're still going to rename it, which some people, including myself, feel that, well, all that's going to do is just set it up that they'll go ahead and a couple years down the road change all the signs anyways.
Well, to the point, the thing, though, that really gets even more upsetting is that all of the people who use that in their address anywhere, that means that they still have to make those changes. They still have to spend the money. But then does nobody lives on the Beltline, do they?
Not that I'm aware of, that anybody has an address, but that you bring up an excellent point, is several years back when they renamed a portion of Centennial over by Autzen Stadium to the Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And how many, if they didn't abbreviate it, that'd be taken off the tops of cars just because it's so long. Anyways, despite the fact of changing the signs, all the businesses on that area had to change their letters, heads, business cards, print ads, and everything else just to accommodate the name change. So it was very costly for the local businesses.
Exactly. And the longer the road is that they do that, the more it costs. I know years ago, and this has been, oh God, what, 25 years ago, 30 years ago in Washington, they named a rather long road, Martin Luther King Boulevard. And there was a huge irate thing about that, but huge number of people, I mean, because there were businesses probably 20 miles along that had to be changed and everything. So that was kind of bad. And the thing is, an awful lot of people won't change it. So that makes a lot of confusion for the post office. It just costs huge amounts of money everywhere for everyone. And it just doesn't make any sense. It's just, you know, I understand trying to consider that person's life as being important or whatever, but let's do it with a small road, or like I keep saying, you know, let's make a statue in the middle of a park someplace and do that.
Well, how about that new bike bridge they're building over by Valley River over the highway?
We don't need to name throughways. We don't need to name transportation things after them. You know, make it something where everybody can go to spend a little time and think about that person. And, you know, while you're driving or walking somewhere is not when you should be spending the time and thinking about them. You should be spending the time thinking about driving.
Well, there are several roads around here that have been named after people. And you just look at that and go, okay, who is that?
Well, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to anybody. If you want to make the statue and a little thing there that describes who it was and what they did and why we're bothering to honor them in some way, you know, and why are we honoring this Pate family or Pepe family or whoever they are? Why are we honoring them?
Well, it's just like the flyway or flyover that they have from I-5 to the Beltline. How about a little plaque somewhere that says that part of the conception or the part of the of this project partly made possible by and list Randy Pape's name on it because he was involved in getting the flyover project going.
Oh, okay. I mean, like that's fine. At either end, a little plate that...
Yeah, you don't have to rename it just to...
Just says thank you.
Yeah, you know.
Really.
Or better yet, call the flyover, you know, the Randy Pape flyover. I don't know.
Well, anyway, it's a very upsetting thing to rename streets and things when, you know, and I remember I came from a little town called Cedro Woolley, Washington. And you want to talk about confusions and problems that can happen. Cedro Woolley, Washington was actually at one time two cities, Cedro and Woolley. And they decided to make them all one city and put them all together. Well, you want to talk about great fun. The roads for those two cities didn't meet. And so when you're driving along, you'll be driving down a road, and then you'll have to make a quick left or right and go a half a block over and then go on your road. I mean, and it's still that way today. They couldn't change the entire town, and yet they decided to put them together and just didn't make any sense at all.
Well, at least they didn't decide to name it the other way around.
Woolly Cedro?
Yeah.
Like Woolly Caterpillar?
Something like that. But something, speaking of local and the renaming of the Beltline, because a lot of people like myself was pretty upset that with as tight as the budget is in Oregon and how they, you know, Measure 56, 57, and I guess there's some more measures wanting to take more money out of our pockets, like an extra 6 cents a gallon gas tax, which is in the works. There hasn't been much hoopla over what's happening in your area of Cottage Grove, where the Lane County commissioners are voted in favor of loaning the Village Green Inn $250,000 for renovations.
Well,
why loan a private business? Why are we in the business of loaning money to a private business? $250,000. I mean, I haven't heard that before.
Well, I don't understand why we are doing that either. I don't know why Wayne County would have done that. I think if there's any place that's deserved of it, it's probably that place. The Village Green is a very, very large destination resort here in Cottage Grove. It does bring a lot of money into Cottage Grove and Lane County, by the way. It is right on the freeway, and they have indeed at times given up property and access roads and things to the county to make the highway through there and the roads through there do nicely,
right.
You know, so they flow properly and so that you had the proper off-ramps and everything like that. They've been very cooperative with the county and the city. I do know that. I was not aware that they had asked the county for money. But then the other thing, too, is I really do believe that with that they'll get paid back. And an awful lot of the other things that they loan money to or give money to, they don't get paid back. So that might have something to do with it, too. I mean, they're going to make money on that one.
Well, so. I don't know. If you go by what the... well, here's the article, April 8th, Register Guard. Let me just read the first three of the paragraphs here, which says the commissioners voted to lend $250,000 for renovations of many of the hotel's 87 rooms, which have marginal heating, poor electrical wiring, and other concerns. Coupled with general commitments from five investors to match the loan, the $500,000 total should be sufficient for a renovation of 50 rooms. There's no guarantee this won't fail, and I do believe in taking risks and believing in people in the community is an important step, says Commissioner Faye Stewart, whose district includes Cottage Grove. And quick little history, which I just wanted to point out, that regarding Faye Stewart, that Faye Stewart, Bobby Green, and Bill Dwyer, those names you should remember because in February 21st, 2007, less than 4 months after the voters said no on the public safety tax initiative in Lane County, those three commissioners decided to enact it anyways. That was the 5 cents a gallon increase in the gas tax that we demanded to get on the ballot, and they wound up getting it anyways. So. But the whole point is, like, even he's not sure that it's going to work. I think part of the reason, this is my own personal opinion, because there's an investor who's made a non-binding, intent to buy. He wants to make it into a truck stop.
Make it into a truck stop?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be a tragedy. That would be an absolute tragedy, because it's gorgeous the way it is. It's got beautiful gardens and sector, and they've just the company that owns it has just spent hundreds of thousands of dollars remodeling, putting in, you know, rebuilding the restaurant and the different meeting rooms and things like that. They've spent a huge amount of money on that. So and I don't quite understand this, because they've also spent a huge amount of money remodeling rooms. They said that 92 rooms need to be remodeled. There's more than 92 rooms in this thing, I think. But I don't know.
Well, the guy that made the offer was the owner of a small chain of West Coast specialty hotels, signed a non-binding letter of intent to turn the resort into a truck stop. So I guess that if they don't renovate it, it'll become a truck stop, which...
Somebody needs to look into that, because there's a truck stop right across the highway. I mean, right across the street, there's a big truck stop. So I don't understand that. I don't. That doesn't make me. And I live here, for heaven's sakes. But
yeah.
I'm sure something's going on, and I don't know what it is. And who knows? Who knows? I don't see that hotel failing, to be honest with you. It is the most expensive hotel in town, but it's still extremely nice and very, very, very. Does, I thought, pretty darn good business.
Well, it is kind of off the freeway. You know, you pretty much have to know it's there to go to it.
Oh, heavens no. Where do you think it is? It is right on the freeway. It is right on the off-ramp to the freeway.
Yeah, but it's not real visible from the – if you're not familiar with the area, you know, there's nothing really much that says, hey, there's a Village Green down here.
Nothing other than a 95-foot tall sign. I mean, you can't do much more. I mean, you've got gardens. I mean, granted, it doesn't have a big giant building there because it's all one floor. It's made to look nice instead of look gaudy or stick out. So I don't know. I can't imagine you not knowing that it's there if you were looking for a motel. It's takes up. It's the only one on that side of the highway. There are two small ones on the other side of the highway, but they don't have any bigger signs than the Village Green.
Right.
Mm. I don't know. It's. I don't think it's going to fail. I mean, it's done pretty well so far, I think. I may be wrong. I haven't paid any attention to it because it's since they've rebuilt it and remodeled it and done all the work on it, I just assumed it was doing fine. I know you can go online and find it, and it looks pretty busy and pretty nice there. I know all of the gardening clubs and organizations use it to have their meetings and stuff because not only does it now have the really nice large meeting rooms, but it is a actual, I don't know what you, I don't know if it's labeled as a, I don't know what it's labeled as, but it is a beautiful gardens. Beautiful, beautiful gardens. And everybody goes there to tour the gardens. I'm hoping they don't mess it up. Anyway.
Well, we'll see. One other thing I thought was really interesting in this week's news, and this comes from the Oregon Business Report. Portland is number 6 in bankruptcies.
Oh, yeah.
And it, let's see.
I'd rather imagine so. You figure we're probably, what are we as far as unemployment? We're probably number 2 in unemployment or so. I mean, we've got to be way up there because there's just an awful lot of money that's not floating around in Oregon right now. That's for sure. It's a pretty hard place to be, and yet it doesn't seem that the real estate has gone down very far for some reason or other. Real estate rates are still fairly high. Nobody's selling anything much, but they're trying to get a lot of money for it, and that may be why.
According to this, according to the article from, again, from the Oregon Business Report, nationwide bankruptcies have increased 52% according to Equifax, and Oregon ranked as the 12th highest among the states. And they said in further bad news, I'm quoting, the U.S. Department of Labor and Statistics reported that Portland lost 37,200 jobs last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, and I have no real facts to back this up with, but watch my words or pay attention or something, because the economy has not recovered, and it's going to be a while, and it may get worse before it gets better again. So, you know, look at the price of oil. The price of gasoline is skyrocketing again. We're back up to $3 a gallon again, and more in some areas. So things are going to happen. Hopefully the president will really get into the working on alternative fuels idea, because that's something that we're going to have to do. Getting just sort of hinging on my idea of electric cars and the idea of, you know, talking about electric cars, but things are going to go electric. Things, period, all are going to go electric. It's the renewable resource that can be moved from place to place fairly easily. You don't hear too much about it other than that maybe it needs to be fixed, but it is in the process. Our entire electrical grid is being upgraded radically, just absolutely radically, as we speak. And nobody's saying a whole lot about it. They're just plain doing it. It's a matter of, I think that they're, I don't know that the government is helping other than again giving loans, but it is basically.
Well, and along that line, one of the other things that Portland is really, really, really upset about is that it's lost its number one standing as being the most friendliest bike city in the nation.
Well,
it's now number two to Minneapolis.
You know, I don't know. I shouldn't be saying this because I'm along in years and I may be relegated to bicycles, but I don't care. I mean, there are a lot of other things I worry about than being the bike-friendliest city in the world. There are a lot of other friendly things I'd rather come up with, and I don't, you know, at this particular point, as poorly as Oregon is doing, Portland's going to be the nastiest city in the world before long because everybody in the state of Oregon is upset. I mean, you know, I don't know of anybody that isn't upset about, well, I know a few people, but most people are very upset about the financial situation. And,
oh, yeah.
And where there isn't any money anymore.
And that's a good lead into my my final news item here. Speaking of money, Portland commissioners okay a $7.5 million for new red light cameras and photo radar.
Red light cameras. Okay, I thought you said photo radar.
The new ones, and this is also shared with a private company. Actually, it's a private company that provides the equipment, and then they just pay a certain percentage. Well, the city pays a certain percentage of the tickets to the company itself. But apparently these cameras are supposed to be higher resolution, and it's also going to record video as well. So they said it will make it a little bit more difficult to fight the ticket because you'll get to watch a 15-second video of you supposedly running the red light. And they're claiming that this is to help reduce accidents and for law enforcement, but having friends and my father also being in law enforcement, we're all in agreement that this is a revenue generator. In fact, it causes more accidents because when you go through these stupid things, I don't know if you've ever been through an intersection that's got red light cameras, but you're so worried about making that one little mistake or crossing over the line just as the light turns yellow, there's going to be a flash. Next thing you know, you're going to get a ticket. So you slam on the brakes and the car behind you slams into you. And, I don't like them.
See, that's interesting. I've never paid any attention to them. I've never driven any different with or without them. Didn't even care. Didn't know where they were.
They're obvious. However, I think it was in Washington State that they increased the yellow light delay by 1 or 2 seconds, and the amount of people that ran the red lights dropped significantly.
Okay, what do you mean the delay?
In other words, the time that it goes from green to yellow to red, they increased that duration of the yellow light for about a second or two, and that 1 or 2 seconds was enough time for people to get stopped, apparently, and the amount of people running red lights drop significantly.
Now, see, I would say that's not the case. I would say when they increase that time, it'll be a very short amount of weeks, days, months, years, whatever, before people are aware of how long that time is, and they'll start running again. It's just that because they think they have X amount of time, and they squeak through and find out they actually have a little bit more. I just don't believe that. Well, I know that trying to squeeze through a yellow light is. You know what we should do, is forget the yellow light, just not have the yellow light, have a red light, and then have a period of time where all four are red, and then they change, so that you don't have anybody going through. And have somebody else coming through on the other side.
Well, I could see somebody. No, green light, red light, hit the brakes.
Yes. Yes.
And then the guy that's tailgating you, especially if you're in rush hour traffic, you know, next thing you know, you got, you've made new friends.
Okay.
But also the people that, you know, like myself, you know, I try my best to, you know, obey all the laws and everything. And when I'm following a big truck, you know, if you're at a double intersection that, you know, you got a, you know, two traffic lights pointing your direction, you can tell when the light's beginning to change. But how often has somebody gone through a light behind a truck? You can't see what's going on. Next thing you know, that light's either yellow or just turned red.
Okay.
In rush hour traffic.
Nasty, and say we need to get those trucks off the road. just need to get them off the road. That's just all there is to it. It's just too much of a problem. They're creating all kinds of problems, in my opinion. As far as the as trying to adjust what timing and things like that's all about to save people from getting tickets or allow them to get through faster, it's not going to make any difference. People are going to do it. They're going to take those chances, and I'm all for putting the lights up and the cameras up. And I do agree that there should be video cameras because you can't prove anything with a still camera.
Right.
So, you know, I think there should have been video cameras from the beginning. So just swapping them out and putting up video cameras is, in my opinion, fine. And it isn't costing us any money because, like you say, it's a revenue generator. So it's not costing us any money. So why are we upset?
Well, that's the point. All it is a revenue generator. It's not law enforcement.
Well, certainly it is.
How do you figure?
Why wouldn't it be law enforcement? The idea is to keep people from running the red lights. And the only thing that's going to keep people from running the red lights has nothing to do with how long the red light is, how long or not long the light is, what kind of little spaces we have between them or anything like that. The only thing that's going to keep people from running red lights is the concern that they're going to get caught and going to get fined. And so, you know, because our society is what it is, we take those chances. And we don't believe that the law means us. You know, we're better than the law. So, nab their ass.
Well, like any patrol officer will tell you, however, that the majority of times that they catch a wanted felon or somebody, you know, with a warrant against them is through a minor traffic infraction, like a license plate at light out or speeding or whatever. That's how they get them. You know, they pull them over, they run the plate, they find out the car's stolen or whatever. And you're not going to do that through...
I don't see any correlation between the two.
Well, having a cop pull somebody over for a violation is how they catch criminals. Having a camera set up there just to snap pictures, whether it's on the intersection or whether it's them sitting in the van with their radar gun, is, you know, they're taking the picture and they're mailing you a ticket, and then you have to go in and prove your innocence.
Okay, see, there's where we have a problem, and you're the problem. See, you don't consider a person running a red light or running a yellow light a criminal. And they are.
Well, yeah, I agree there. I agree with you 100% there.
Well, then we're catching criminals.
Well, all you're doing is taking their picture and sending them a citation in the mail.
That's still catching a criminal.
If they follow through. But also, you got to prove that you were driving that car or you weren't driving that car.
Well, if they've got your picture in that car, I think that kind of proves it. Isn't that the idea? The picture is to prove that you were there and you did it?
That's true.
Okay.
Okay, but let's say somebody borrows your car and they go run a red light and the picture gets snapped. Well, because it was your car, your registration, now you get the citation in the mail and now you got to take time out of your day or from work or whatever, and you have to go down and you have to sign a form that says that, no, that was not me.
You know, I kind of, I'm sorry. Step A, I don't loan my car. Step B, I pay attention to who I would loan my car to if I were to loan my car. And if it is your car, you are responsible. You are responsible for it. Unless it's stolen, you are responsible for it. And so, you know, this gets back to this whole thing with insurance and our society has decided we're not responsible for anything, ourselves or anything else. We'll just let somebody that we pay be responsible for everything. Well, that isn't the way it works. You are responsible for it. And that's why we got to get rid of insurance companies and figure out some way to take care of that instead, because the insurance companies simply make everybody say, well, I'm not responsible for it. I'll just do it anyway, and if something happens, no big thing. Insurance will cover it.
Well, and speaking of responsible, I haven't been responsible because I haven't given out the phone number.
Go ahead.
Or how somebody can call into the show right now. And I'd like to apologize and become responsible now and invite people to join the show at area code 646-721-9887. The chat room is open. And that's at www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. You can send emails. We do read them. We do respond to them. And thank you to the people who have sent us emails. And
do you have your email open right now?
Yes.
I thought I'd say you were closing it because it's something was going wrong or something.
No, that was just Firefox taking up a lot of processor. But anyways, that address is talk@krbnradio.com, and we would love to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely. Tell us something, even if it's to yell at us. I don't care. Yell at us.
Well, yell at Cliff. Don't yell at me.
Well, all right. You can yell at me. I'm tough. I can take it. Or something like that. Anyway, yes, I tell you. But, well, what about, I lost the thing here, and I can't find it. I wrote down a whole list of coffee party, new coffee party places. We've got a couple of coffee parties locally this weekend, and we've got about five new coffee parties this weekend in Oregon and three new coffee parties in the state of Washington. So the coffee party is on its way. If you're interested, get involved because, and there's one of them right here in Eugene, and I can't find, I wrote it all down somewhere, but I can't seem to find it. I have this problem with my computer too. I put things away and promptly lose them. There's lots of space in my computer. There's stuff rattling around in there for years, I'm sure, that I can't find. But I thought I knew where I had it. I obviously don't.
Well, while you're looking for it, do you want to kind of tell the folks briefly what the coffee party is?
Well, a coffee party is sort of in answer to the tea party. The tea party, and I do want to talk about that just a tiny little bit too, but the tea party, the coffee party rather, is more interested in individuals getting involved, every individual getting involved. It's not big meetings of large groups of people. It's bunches and bunches and bunches of smaller groups of people getting together. And now there may be a point in time when that information that gets gathered in each of the smaller groups, you do have a little bit more because as you make all these smaller groups and little groups all over the place, all of a sudden the overall organization turns into a very big, very important group of people. And so, this is happening so fast. I mean, I just can't believe how fast the coffee party is growing and people are actually learning about things and doing things. And I think it's everybody is putting the Tea Party and the Republican Party together, and there is such confusion and such a large problem going on with those two organizations, those two groups. They will ultimately merge, I believe, the Tea Party and the Republican Party will basically merge together and become the Republican Party. So the coffee party may be the deciding factor in some things coming up. And maybe, are you playing music? It may be a larger organization than people thought it was ever going to be. So basically, I think it's a good idea to get involved. You can put these little groups together, and you can meet as often or as seldom as you wish. And it's a lot easier to just make decisions about that sort of thing if you have a small group instead of a huge group. The Tea Party has these big celebration type things, and you have to travel to get there, and you have huge large groups of people, and that's it's a great. There's lots to be said about that because it becomes a party, but these are just little gatherings, little get-togethers, and makes it a lot easier for people to be involved. And be able to literally have their voice be heard. And so I think the coffee party, I think, is going to do, it's still so small and so, just getting going that I don't think we realize what kind of a huge effect it's going to have on things in not too long a time. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to take place.
Well, and it's growing really, really rapidly. In fact, what's interesting about the coffee party is that it started from a Facebook page.
Well, you know, I wasn't even going to bring that up. I'm so sick of Facebook and Twitter and such. And I don't Twitter. I'm sorry. I have a Twitter, but I don't ever say anything on it anymore. But, you know, everything starting from Facebook and Twitter and all of these. So, and that, unfortunately, I don't think is going to last very long. I mean, these things come and go and come and go. I mean, let's face it, hardly anybody talks about YouTube anymore, and it's huge. I mean, you know, it was the thing that every word out of everybody's mouth for years was YouTube. And then all of a sudden it turned to Facebook for whatever reason. I'm not quite sure why. But it'll come and go. And it's fine. It started from a Facebook thing. What that does tell you, even more important, is the huge change in the way America and the world, and this is not just America, but this is a worldwide thing, this huge change in how information is spread, how things are happening. I mean, we're losing all of our television stations. I hope you know that. They're not going to be television stations much longer because we've put them on the cable and now on demand on the Internet. Radio. Now, radio may end up on the Internet as well. I think it's going to take longer. It's really funny because radio kind of just hangs in there. When television first came out, it was the death of radio. Well, very much the opposite. Radio got 10 times bigger as soon as television started going. I don't know that it dictated one or the other, but radio just keeps getting more and more and more and more and more. Television, I think, broadcast television stations. Now, television is still going to be around. You're still going to have it in your home, and you're still going to have lots of things to choose from, but it's all going to be delivered by a satellite or by a wire, one or the other, and mostly by, I think, satellite before very long. Uh-huh. The wires are going to go as well. So everything is going to be satellite. Now, I got to figure out how to put up a satellite so that we can get our program on our own satellite somewhere. That's the next thing. You need to come up with a couple of bucks, Robin, so we can put up a satellite. What are you doing?
Video killed the radio star. Anyways, in a little humor, last 15 minutes of the show, how would you like a car that can produce 800 foot-pounds of torque at 0 RPM, go from 0 to 60 in the quarter mile, 114 miles per hour in the quarter mile.
In 11 seconds.
In 11 seconds.
Yes, I understand.
And it's a Datsun 1200.
Well, that's something you can't buy.
It's disguised as a Datsun 1200. Let me put it that way.
Can't buy that. Right now and tomorrow, you can, however, buy a Tesla. And the Tesla electric car goes from 0 to 60 in 4.2 seconds and does so on no gasoline, putting out no emissions. It's a fairly expensive car. There are an awful lot of vehicles that are available. This guy built this electric car, and the thing is, first of all, let's just let everybody know, do you know when we started with electric cars?
It's been a long time, I believe.
It's been a long time?
Yeah.
1916.
Yeah.
The automobile industry decided to go from 16 to 32 to go to 35 or somewhere on there, decided to go with electric cars. Now, why we stopped, I'm not quite too sure, other than the fact that the distance thing, you needed gasoline, you needed something that was replenishable to go distances. Now, why they didn't put in and batteries. A lot of things have changed since then. But right now, there are so many different things. Oregon's Governor Ted Kulongoski, is recommending that the state replace the 1,500 hybrid tax with a 5,000 electric vehicle credit. So that if you decide you want to buy an electric car right now, and it's going to be easier and easier and easier for you to do so, Nissan has come out with the Leaf. And that is available in the state of Oregon, or actually, I think it's available nationwide, but at least in Oregon, and I think they're doing it here in one other state. Right now, you can go out and buy one right now. Almost every Nissan dealer will either have one or they'll be able to get one for you very quickly. And they're available right now at a reasonable price. That's the thing. You've got an electric car. Now, the Leaf, by the way, will go 85 miles an hour, and it will do that for 100 miles. Or maybe they'll go 100 miles an hour and do it for 85 miles, one or the other. And they do it on all electric, totally electric. The price of a Leaf, the Nissan Leaf, and I'm doing quite an ad for them here, I guess, but the price of the Nissan Leaf, by the time you get all of the different promises of money from various and sundry different people, the federal government, the state of Oregon, and so on, is about $22,000 or $20,000. It's really very reasonably priced. Kulongowski is also setting up a series of fueling stations or replenishing stations or charging stations,
yeah,
whatever you want to call them. Throughout the Portland and that area. There's like 20 of them or something that he wants to build and should have in place in the next couple of years so that you can drive and go from one to the other. Now, that's a very nice idea, and by going to some of these refueling stations or charging stations, the new cars can be charged very quickly. It doesn't take overnight. You can charge them in a matter of half an hour, depending on how much power you've got going into these charging stations. But there's so much more going on. This is the individual, and this is where we're going to be going to it. The Nissan is actually behind the curve already, because there are a couple, three different manufacturers out with a little bit more expensive cars, but they will go up to 300 miles on a charge. And that's where we start becoming very enamored with these cars, because that's been the 300-mile, 250 to 300-mile mark on a charge or on a between stopping at a service station has been the standard for years and years and years. That's what most cars were designed to do, 250 to 300 miles on a tank of gas. Okay, now it's 200. Now it's 300 miles on a charge. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you where. And this is just my opinion about electric cars. I mean, yeah, like, for example, the white zombie here, the one that we're talking about, which is a converted Datsun 1200, and the link to the YouTube video on that one is on our Blog Talk homepage, and I highly recommend that you take a look at it, because this guy broke three quarter-mile records in one sitting. And so it's really impressive, but in my opinion, until they can, well, for one thing, I'm poor, and I can't afford to go out and buy a car that I'm just going to use for commuting around town here. My car has to be able to, if I need to go to another state on business, you know, I'm going to be traveling 500 miles, 600 miles in a day. I need that range. And also with traffic, for example, I was in Washington State yesterday. And on the I-5 coming in from Vancouver, which I guess is normal, it was just, let's put it this way, I could have very easily got passed by a wheelchair. That's how slow traffic was going. And so if you got bad weather, you're running a heater, you're running lights, you're running all the accessories in your little electric car, and you're idling at about 2 miles an hour, all that's burning up your power that you have available. And you may not make your trip home without stopping at a charging station, and unless, like you were pointing out the other day, they have enough charging stations where you can just swap the batteries out, you know, you're just not going to make it. Or if you do run out of juice somewhere along the road, again, unless everything's common, you can easily swap batteries out. You know, it's not just like you can just walk to the store or to the gas station and get a gallon of fuel and bring it back and make it to the charging station again.
Well, see, that's the thing. We're in the infancy of this whole thing, And there are so many things that people understand that are happening right now that are being done that are heading us towards the point of having electric cars. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but Ford Motor Company has just hooked up with Microsoft so that they will have Microsoft computers and things in their cars and working with their cars. One of the things.
Oh yeah, sure. You go up to the intersection and it's like, "Oops, I need to reboot."
Well, we're going to get
a passenger. I got to install another application because I have a passenger in my.
They've already got the car set up so that you push the start button to shut them off, you know. So, but anyway, the thing is, this is going to be a lot more involved than. And I was talking about the grid, the electrical grid. That's all a part of computers and understanding where the electricity has to go and when. The business of being able to go from point to point, they're already working on standards to make batteries a specific size and shape so that everybody's car will run on the same battery so that you can have battery exchange stations so that you can do just like you walk going into a service station and getting gas, you can go into a service station and have them pop in a new battery, and it takes even less money time than it does to put in gas. All of these things are being taken into consideration. There's a lot more things to consider, too. For example, everybody's going to be plugging their car in when they get home at night. And by the way, they've got systems already so that you don't have to plug your car in. You drive it over a pad, and it does it inductively instead. And so you recharge your car without even having to plug it in. It just does it. The car will have a computer in it that will set it up so that it knows when the best time to charge your car is. So it's going to charge during a period of time when other people are not using as much electricity. There are all these things to take into consideration, and they're all being worked on right now. It does mean there will have to be standards of sizes and shapes and systems. And that, of course, as you obviously are, everyone's aware of, that's not the easiest thing to do. But we have learned that if you actually get down and want to do it, you can. We can take the example of CDs and how, you know, it used to be that you had VHS and you had beta and you have all these different things. We're learning that we need to come up with a system and then let everybody go after it and utilize it, because that's the way we win. Otherwise, everybody loses. So we do know. And there are different countries. See, this is the thing. This is, again, a worldwide effect that's going on.
One thing that they're going to have to do, and what's been going on with Toyota is an excellent example. And, I'll get back to another point I was going to make, is you got to keep it simple. I mean, for example, back when cars didn't have a computer in them, you know, you had your backyard mechanics and everybody that could fix them. Then as soon as they put the computer in, for the first couple of years, nobody knew how to work on them. In fact, a lot of people still don't know how to work on them. And now you got the hybrids and all different types of makes and models and designs. The more, well, like Scotty said on Star Trek, the more complicated you make the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the works.
Which is exactly why we're going to have electric cars. There are 82%.
What's going on with Toyota? They've narrowed it down, or at least they think they've narrowed down their acceleration problem to the electronics, to the computer.
But it's not an electric car.
No, but it's computer controlled. The point is that instead of going from a very simple mechanical linkage, they went to electrical, which uses some extra components, including a servo and sensors and other things. In other words, they just made it more complicated, and the more complicated you make things, the more things that can go wrong, and especially when you are talking about the abuse that the cars get. You know, I know they try to test them with as much a rough environment as they can put them through what the average driver will do, but, you know, cars have to go besides just normal freeways and back roads and all types of weather. You know, a lot of times they have to deal with rough gravel roads and it's just, they have to be really, really durable and really well-built and easy to work on. And
how long did it take us to get gasoline engines to the point that they were reliable?
It took a long time. Same thing with tires. You know, you don't get a flat tire very often.
So it's going to happen to this, too. But it's going to happen. You need to put it in your head that it is going to happen. Everything is going to be electric. It's simply going to happen.
Well, I got no problem with that. If they can give me a car that will do everything that my gas-powered car would do now, then with a performance and something that I can still work on, that's reliable, yeah, at some point I'll do it. But currently with the technology, same thing with hybrid cars, currently with the technology to have just a commuter car, people in my financial condition, well, you know, I'm going to stick with my old car till it dies, and even then I'll probably still have it.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, you keep putting this in the position of you, and if they can do that, it can be done. It can be done right now, but nothing happens overnight. And so we've got to sit back and take it as it happens. And these different manufacturers, everybody's coming up with these different things. The different manufacturers are working on the systems, and that's like there's a brand new battery. There's a polymer battery now instead of the metal hydride. It's a polymer, and it's lighter. It puts out more electricity. It lasts longer between charges, and it will take more charges. And it does not have the susceptibility to blowing up or catching on fire.
It's also lighter.
It's lighter, significantly lighter.
Yeah, the car that we were talking about, when they switched batteries, it lightened it by 772 pounds.
Okay, please understand that what you saw there was old. He went to a lithium battery. We're already better batteries than that. We're already to the polymer battery.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lithium metal battery, and we've already got batteries that will last longer and are lighter than even that. So Hyundai, for example, is now putting out a new car. Hyundai has quietly sat back and changed the face of the world by themselves. They have, the last 2 years, have had their fuel economy in the last 2 years. An average, fleet average, of all of their cars of more than 30 miles per hour. That's the highest fuel economy of any manufacturer in the world. And they've done this, by the way, without having a hybrid car. They are just now coming out with the Sonata, which is their first hybrid car. And I'm talking about last month they're doing this. This is new. The Hyundai Sonata Hybrid is the new kid on the block, and they are using the lithium polymer batteries. And one of the things that they're doing in order to try to make them reasonably priced is their own factories are making the lithium polymer batteries. They're licensed by LG Chemicals to do that, and so it's lighter, it's better, it's more durable as well.
Well, the batteries is exactly what it's going to take. Anyways, in the last 2 minutes of the show, I got an announcement that. Today we were on at 11 o'clock to kind of try the time slot. We'll be back next Saturday at our normal time slot at 10 a.m. And we would like your feedback on what you think about the 11 o'clock time slot. Or do you prefer the 10 o'clock? Or what other time slot that you as the listener would think it would work better? And you could send your comments. Send us an email at talk@krbnradio.com. In addition to, if you have any suggestions or news items that you would like us to discuss, and of course...
By the way, we're talking Pacific Daylight Time.
Pacific Time, correct.
This is a worldwide thing. I keep forgetting that.
And if you're nervous about coming on a talk show, send us an email. We'll read your email over the air. If you don't want us to give your name, just be sure to indicate, don't give my name. But
or just call us and don't give us your name.
That too.
We're easy.
But, we need your input to make the show a lot better and let us know what you think about it. And your input is very important for us to improve the show. But we do have a lot of people listening on the archives. We do appreciate that. But again, let us know. Let us know what you think. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We'll be back next Saturday. At our normal time, 10 a.m.
Oh, we're going to be back at 10. Okay. All right. Sounds like a good idea. So don't forget that. That's a little earlier.
Absolutely. Well, that's our normal time. But we tried 11 o'clock just to see how well it would work. And again, send us your feedback, let us know. We're more than happy to hear from you, and we do respond to our emails. So until next week.
It's been a really good week, and been a good weekend, so I look forward to getting back to us. Thank you.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.